Cyber Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A little warmer today as we're back up around the 80-degree mark. Nice weather, though. I thought there was a chance of rain, but it looks like that rain chance has gone away. So,
We both got our cars washed in the last 24 hours.
That usually brings rain.
Yeah, so I would guarantee rain before Friday in the Auburn Opelika area.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe so. I can't take the green,
stake,
the pollen and
put my reputation on it.
Well, usually that's the best way to bring rain is to wash your car. Get your car washed or if you if you decide you finally need to break down and if your lawn or whatever needs watering, do that and then it usually will rain. But yeah, I hope everybody doing well here on this Tuesday. We usually have the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, on with us at this time. But I saw him yesterday at Stephen Pearl's presser and asked him and he said, nah, he's going to be en route. And I thought, man, you're usually – I didn't even pursue it. I didn't go any further. I thought – you're usually at the park well before 2 hours before first pitch. Today I'm over for football today and was talking with Jason Caldwell and Brian Matthews. They're both going to Atlanta and Jason said, "Yeah, he's on the air with Brad because Andy is already on the road on the way to Indianapolis." So it turns out no, Andy wasn't talking about being en route to Atlanta. He was talking about being in the air on the way to Indianapolis. So he said, he told me yesterday, and he didn't say once they land, but he said, if I can get to the phone before the show's over, he would let us know. So we may have Andy on today, but looks like probably not, as Auburn already heading to Indianapolis to get ready for their matchup against Illinois State in the NIT Final Four Thursday night.
And I would imagine that we're sending – and Brad's done a great job on baseball this year when Andy's unavailable and he's got to take the lead. So that would presumably mean Brad's on the call tonight.
Yeah, Jason is back on the air. I mean, he's had quite a few opportunities.
Oh, and he's been great, too.
Oh, Jason, yeah. Jason loves baseball, and he really knows it, so –
and it feels like a big week for the Auburn baseball team.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
And non-conference games, look, I think they matter because you want to compete and you want to use every opportunity to take those reps on the mound and at the plate and do your best with them. But at this time of year, you're largely measured based on what you can do in conference.
Right. But this midweek game, this non-conference game is against a top five team.
Oh, certainly. But this week, and you have the quick turnaround because of Easter, so you've got a game Thursday against Arkansas. Like this week feels like if you can right the ship at the plate, if a couple guys can heat up, if you can find some answers offensively, maybe there's a, you know, I mean, you can go back to being the team people thought you were very recently. If you can't, if this slump stretches into you call it a lull, if you want. You know, I know some guys are
definitely a slump right now. It's sort of like a team-wide slump.
I know, but
slump.
Baseball players are real nervous about that word, Bill. You know that. Guys
yeah,
don't
gotta
like
have
it.
Slump busters, man. You got to find ways to get out of it.
Or blockbusters, you know, depending on what you need. But, like, you know, this whatever you need to do to end the drought, You know, speaking of rain, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you need to do, you got to do it.
Well, and really looking forward to seeing the lineup for tonight's game. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, wondering if they will shuffle the lineup, make a change or two, because this is really good quality competition you've got tonight in Georgia Tech before Arkansas comes into town on Thursday. So, yeah, we can talk about that. We'll look forward to that matchup there tonight.
I will monitor the situation as far as when we get a lineup. We'll see if we can make something happen.
Yeah, well, you're looking on social media?
It's usually
there just before it'll pop up there on the stat broadcast.
Yeah, I was going to say baseball's usually pretty good about putting the lineup in, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as they've got it, and they have not posted it yet to social media. I would imagine before. I would think in the next half hour or so we'll probably have.
They'll be on the field, you know, warming up. They may be, as a matter of fact, right now, because they usually open the gates an hour and a half before first pitch.
By the way, I'm told Russ Chandler is a very cool place. I've never been to Georgia Tech's baseball stadium. I'm told Russ Chandler is a very cool place to watch a game.
It's been around for a while.
But well maintained. Mm-hmm. I believe that's the case with all of Georgia Tech's athletics. Like they're not new buildings. I know Bobby Dodd was renovated 20 something years ago, but they're very well maintained, and that's something that if you get the chance, if you're in the greater Atlanta area listening, or even somewhere where you can make the drive. You want to watch some live baseball tonight, Auburn and Georgia Tech at Russ Chandler getting started in the next 2 hours or so.
Yeah, pregame at 5:45, first pitch shortly after 6 o'clock over on Wings 94.3. So yeah, that's on tap this evening. Speaking of Auburn.
Another big midweek game for Auburn. They've scheduled pretty ambitiously.
That goes along with, and again, sorry, Ed, but I mean, the expectations for this team were that they should be able to compete at the highest level. And it really hurts when you're swept by your rival. And Auburn's now lost 5 straight conference games. But no, they weren't backing away from playing people this year out of conference, knowing how tough that conference schedule always is. So that's baseball. We mentioned.
By the way, they got moved to ESPN2.
Yeah.
So that game on national television on basic cable tonight. If you want to watch,
which seems unusual, doesn't it, for a college baseball game to be on at this time of year? I guess is there no tournament action of any type?
I think ESPN is maybe showing fewer MLB games this year.
I think maybe
some college baseball might. I think some college baseball might find its way to ESPN and ESPN2 more often.
Well, that's good.
In the aftermath of
great,
that.
Great that I have the opportunity to be on national TV.
Yeah, so you've got some – I don't know if that's exactly the plan, but it is interesting that those two things are connected, where it seemed like you never saw regular season college baseball on ESPN or ESPN2 as recently as last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got pretty early in the season. You got a midweek Tuesday night game. By the way, during the first week of the regular season of
Major League Baseball. That's
exactly.
Right.
So it's Yeah, I think ESPN2's got Georgia Tech and Auburn tonight on ESPN2, but you can also catch it on Wings 94.3 and the Auburn Sports Network broadcast live here on the Auburn Network family of stations.
One thing that we
my company man.
Yeah, one thing we do know that we speculated yesterday: Christian Chatterton starting tonight for Auburn. So Andres Alvarez expected to go Thursday. Jake Marciano on Friday, and then we'll see, because Arkansas is a right-handed heavy lineup, and it'll be interesting to see if Auburn goes with the lefty Jackson Sanders or if they want to go with the righty Alex Petrovic on Saturday, as far as matchups. But both those guys should be available on Saturday. But Chatterton will get the start for Auburn tonight, allowing Andres Alvarez to be able to pitch this weekend, get his first SEC action of the year, who has been lights out with the midweek games.
We wondered about that after the way he pitched last week against South Alabama, that if Auburn decided...
He's got an ERA of under one now.
If Auburn decided to shake things up in the rotation, or if you had a player get injured, Alvarez seemed ready to step in and be a weekend starter in the conference. And now, I mean, you can't help but wonder, Bill, like, think about the opportunity tonight represents for Chatterton. Because if he pitches well against Georgia Tech, he's in the same spot that Alvarez was in a week ago, where he's an established.
Mm-hmm. He's a guy that had multiple SEC starts last year as a freshman.
And if he can navigate this Georgia Tech lineup, then suddenly he's a player who you'd look at as the next guy up in the rotation, potentially. And a guy that, I mean, we've been hearing about Chatterton's ability, and he's flashed it on occasion since he arrived on campus. You know, this is his second year, and he's... He's someone that really seems like he could step in, especially if he gets hot, right? Like, he's somebody that certainly could be one of your options, either as a starter or as the guy waiting in the wings if the starter falters in a big game down the stretch. So yeah, tonight's a midweek game. It's not an SEC game, but it's a big opportunity for Auburn to bounce back after. After a rough weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, and as we were saying yesterday, that's been the pleasant surprise has been how good we knew that there was potential there pitching wise, but how good they have been and the depth of this pitching staff that we have seen already. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, it's they're not going to hit a rough patch either. I mean, pitchers can have that too. I mean, but it's good to know that you have that, which gives you a chance to win every time you go out there as they wait for the bats to try to warm back up.
Yeah, it's an Auburn bat, and that's the big question, Bill, is what's it going to take to warm the bats up, right? Like, was it – how about this? How seriously do you consider that it might have been Auburn faced some really good pitching the last 2 weeks? Like, that's a big reason why against Alabama and Texas.
Oh, I'm not going to take anything away from them. And Texas may have, you know, the best pitching staff that Auburn will face all year long. But there's no way around the fact that Auburn had their opportunities. It wasn't as though they were going 1-2-3, you know, three up, three down all the time and not having opportunities. It looked like some guys were over swinging. It looks like, you know, you get into these things where you want to hit two home runs with every swing, that type thing. It looked like Auburn had some,
which is extremely rare.
It's so rare that I don't think it's ever happened. But no, I mean, guys just over swinging at times or getting a little too anxious because I mean it is. You know, it's hard to have a stretch like Auburn's had over the last five conference games where you have as many opportunities to drive in runs and don't come, you just can't come up with that timely hit. Some of them, sometimes Auburn has hit the ball hard at some of the other, the defenders on the other team. Other times they just they look like they're just a little too impatient or trying too hard.
Is there anyone where you get the sense it's like, boy, this player in particular really needs to heat up over these next couple of days, or Auburn maybe needs to think about who else they have potentially?
I mean, I love Bub Terrell. I mean, he is the prototypical, you know, five-tool prospect kind of guy that I could see major league teams just drooling over because he's big, he's fast, he's strong, he's a good defender. He's got a strong arm, and he's got that just pop in his bat. But he has really struggled since conference play has started. I mean, we looked at it. I think he struck out 15 of his 32 at bats in conference play.
Yes, Bub is 5 of 32 in conference play with 15 strikeouts and 3 walks.
Yeah.
And he has 1 homer, and I believe the other 4 hits are singles.
Yeah, and the homer came fairly early. Mm. You know, so it's you wonder sometimes you hit one and you want to swing for the fences every time. I don't know what's going on with Bub. He is missing pitches more than we saw him do all of last year. I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, it happens in baseball, but it's just he needs a bloop or a flare or something to fall in just to sort of break that feeling. You get in a situation where you just feel like, well, no matter what I do, like was it Brian yesterday was saying, it seems like Bub's 0-2 every at bat. If he takes a pitch, it's a strike. If he swings, he fouls it back or something, and he ends up being down to the count, And then the pitcher has him at their mercy.
Bristol's 3 for 23.
Yeah,
in SEC
and he's
play.
And he's supposed, and he's the spark plug. He's the igniter. He's the guy that really got the offense going when they were rolling.
Mason McCrane is 4 for 23 in conference play. Brandon McCrane is 5 for 28 in conference play. I mean, there are a couple guys where you really feel like there's particular pressure, not just tonight. We'll see what the lineup looks like, but this weekend against Arkansas at home. Right, where it's a because you do have, I mean, of the options I think you could go to instead, right? You've got, I mean, you'd want to find, I mean, I guess what you're already finding at bats for Cade Ballou. Maybe you could find more. I mean,
Cade has only had like 11 at bats in conference play.
Cade's 4 of 11 in SEC play.
Todd Clay's 4 of 14. But really, nobody with 20 at bats is hitting over 250 in conference play because Lucas Steele's hitting 278 and 18.
Frelick and Guevara are hitting exactly 250 in conference play.
That's bad when, of your regulars, the best batting average of any regular is 250. So yes, it has been.
Rembert's 8 of 33 with 2 extra base hits.
Yeah. So he's at 242 or whatever. So, yeah, it's been a struggle. They hit it well 2 weeks ago against Georgia Tech. You know, that was a surprise because Tech brought in a pitcher who I don't believe had a loss. Well, no, that was South Alabama starter. But, I mean, Tech's got a pretty deep pitching staff as well. So, yeah, again, that's coming up at 6 tonight. As we mentioned, Andy Burcham usually with us. He is in the air, I believe, as we speak, on the way to Indianapolis. Where Auburn gets ready for Illinois State. But while they've been getting ready and preparing for this, Auburn has added a player. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive. You can give us a call on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, that number 334-321-1390. And we mentioned Auburn has added a player. This is not a commitment. This is not a transfer. This is an international signing, as Auburn has signed a player from the French B League, Narcisse, and we think it's just Goy. I think the N is silent. So Narcisse Goy, a 7-footer who averaged a double-double, averaging just under 11 points, 11.5 rebounds, and over 2.5 blocks per game. I would say it's safe to say that his offensive game is probably within 3 feet of the rim because he's shooting 70% from two-point range for the Poitiers basket 86 in the French B League. So there's a guy that, you know, again, I don't know the level of competition there, but I like the thought of adding a rim protector. You know, a guy who's had a couple of, you know, 20 rebound games and 5 or 6 block shot games. That kind of you can't teach height and the ability to block shots.
I can't imagine that Auburn is going to view this as like, all right, well, we're done at the 5.
No, I don't think so.
Like unless the expectations internally are like drastically different from what I've heard, you know, from talking to a couple of people who are familiar with Goy's game, it does seem like the acquisition of Jovic a year ago, where it's like
here's a young guy, and I think he's about the same age Philip was last year. I think he's 20.
Here's a toolsy European pro who could maybe grow into something really special, who could help you immediately. You know, I think the thinking is that if Narcisse is healthy in September, October, if he's ready to go for the start of the season, then he should be a guy competing for rotation minutes at least immediately.
Oh, yeah.
But he could be a lot more than that before his college basketball career is over. Kind of like Jovic, where it's like, right, you know, Jovic was a rotational big, you know, not your first option at either position, but a guy that could give you minutes. He's growing into someone who could maybe be a lot more than that before his career is over. But yeah, I think Auburn probably added, you know, I would still think that they want to find a lot of minutes at the 5.
Yeah, I think you'd like an experienced 5, and then a big time point guard, as good a point that can help you on both ends of the court, offense, defense. You know, so I would think if you do that and you can retain the young guys we've been talking about, then you feel pretty good about the roster you have going into next year.
Yeah, even with, like, uncertainty around Tejada. I mean, I guess uncertainty around everybody. But if you've – I mean, if you're thinking – well, you want to have an 8 or 9 man rotation you feel really good about, and you want to have those 8 or 9 guys locked in as early as possible. You know, I think Auburn's got 5 guys on the roster right now that feel like you could lock them in to next year's 8 or 9 man rotation and feel secure about, okay, you know what you're getting there. It's the four underclassmen that we've talked about, the four first year guys in the rotation. Overton, Freeman, Jovich, and Sebastian, and then Tejada. I'd say those are the 5 guys where you could very easily pencil those guys into next year's 8 or 9 man rotation without too much concern and then build around them. Can you keep all 5 of those guys? Eh, we'll see. You know, I think the goal for Steven is keeping as many of them as he can on the team and then continuing to build around them. They only keep 4, you know, if Tejada leaves, for example. Like you said, you know, you've got to find you already knew that, especially in the aftermath of Keyshawn Murphy was a senior. You already knew that you were going to need to find minutes at the 5 next year. That's not really what Jovich does, not really Sebastian's game. You didn't have an internal fit that makes a ton of sense. You knew you were going to have to go shopping at the 5. If Dodd stays, I think it reduces the urgency at the 1 pretty considerably.
No question.
You still probably need to find I mean, I guess you could go into Tejada and Overton alone at the 1, and then it's about finding some guys who can give you minutes at the 2 and the 3.
Yeah, you need somebody else on the wing if you did that.
So. Right, and so you'd still want to add to the backcourt somewhere, but if without Tejada, like you said, like it's pretty urgent that you find somebody who can give you more than just a puncher's chance at the point guard spot. It's two positions where you're going to be shopping. Presumably, you're going to be shopping at the top of the market.
Yeah, I would sure hope that Auburn can. That's what it sounded like yesterday when Steven was talking about the new GM Kloman.
And maybe a player like Narcisse makes it to where you're not going to have to shop at the top of the market for multiple guys at the 5, and you feel like between
maybe you can get an experienced guy, but he doesn't have to be as you said, top of the market doesn't have to be somebody that breaks the bank. For you to be able to bring in and still help you and allow you to then move, Jovich and Sway, have them be your 4s next year. And you still got Mech, I guess. I mean, we'll see what happens with Emeka Okorum.
Oh, I'd love to know sort of internally what you do, like how you view Emeka, how you view Bashir.
Oh, yeah, I'd
Walker.
Love to.
Walker. Like, I mean, these are all guys where it's
And what's the situation going to be with Caden?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen enough from any of them on the floor this year to have them sort of slotted for a spot in the rotation next year. But you'd love to keep that possibility alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you thought when you brought them in. You thought that they'd have a chance at some point.
As a college basketball player, though, in this day and age, it's a dangerous place to be where it's like your team can't really count on you next year as a known quantity. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could choose to keep you and develop you, but you could watch them sign guys that play your position.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And maybe you need to go somewhere where you can get on
when's
the floor.
When does the basketball transfer portal close? Does it close? Is it a 30-day?
I think it's either a 30 or a 45 that opens a week from today.
I was thinking maybe a 30, so that would mean it would be, it would be May 6th or, around in there. And I guess you would have to hope if you're one of those guys that that your team's done signing. That's why you
15?
See so many players.
It's a 15-day window?
Only
Is that what I'm saying?
15-day window? Wow.
All right, let me make sure I've got that right.
Because, it opens on the 7th. Wow, if it closed on the 21st, the signing period, the transfers can start signing as soon as the portal opens. The regular signing period for high school junior college players doesn't open until the 15th. That would be a very short portal.
From now until April 6th, you're going to hear players announce intentions to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
April 7th is the official opening date of the portal. That's a week from today.
All right.
7th through the 21st.
So it is 15 days.
And there will be a flood of activity.
Oh, man,
in the first couple
be.
Of days in that, there will in that be. Portal, yeah.
I would
that's
say,
also when you can start visiting. Like that's yeah. when you can start hosting players on visits because they're officially in the portal.
There will be a lot of decisions made by that first weekend.
One would think that first weekend's also gigantic for visits.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thought of you,
but
can
a lot of them, if they like what they see on the visit, they're going to go ahead and
that's true.
And sign up.
But that's the 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yep.
Yeah, like that's a weekend where. Yeah, I would imagine Steven's going to be talking to a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
Steven and his coaches.
All right, again.
And Larry Vickers, for that
oh,
matter,
yes,
too.
Who's you're also, right.
That's
you
the
better be.
The...
You'd better be. I mean, you'd better have already had arrangements with agents of players who are expected or you understand are going into the portal. Because, yeah, you can't wait till the portal opens and then go, hey, let's get in touch with this person and see if they're interested.
And I guess we'll see if dominoes fall with coaching changes, but you also still get, I guess you still get 15 days for that too. And that could, like,
right.
that's...
There will be some, yeah, there will be coaching changes yeah. as well. All right, so that's something to look forward to. But Auburn has added a player already to its roster for next year. And Narcisse Goy. So love to hear your thoughts on that or anything going on in the world of sports. Today was a day where we got a chance to watch a little of football practice, watch a little bit more, actually. We got a little longer window today than we have, so we can talk about that. But we'd love to hear from you as we continue with the Tuesday Drive. Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with you. And, again, we'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Today was day 7, I think, of spring football practice. But the Tigers out in full gear today on what turned into a fairly warm morning. Started off very comfortable. When we first went out there around 9 o'clock, we were out there for a half an hour or so this morning. And they practiced until after 11:30, and it was getting pretty warm by then. Didn't get a chance to talk with Alex Golish. We will get that opportunity. Well, the media will get that opportunity Friday afternoon. Well,
we're sending you.
Well, I was hoping.
Yeah, we're sending
you.
I'll be here. Yeah,
Don will be in here.
Don and I'll tell stories, and I'll ask Don about spritz and ribs. And,
okay,
and then you can come in and report.
Yeah,
what
Coach Golish had to say. Yeah. Today
and Taylor owes us for scheduling a 4 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right.
Media opportunity.
Yeah, I told him that. Really, I mean, we ought to get Coach Golish on again.
Taylor should have to come on and explain.
I love Taylor, but I think we'd probably our audience would probably rather hear Coach Golish than Taylor. But I've seen Alex popping up on different places here. Recently, so
we'd love, you know what?
Love to get him back.
In the lead up to A-Day,
yeah,
would love an opportunity
absolutely.
To talk to Coach Golish.
You want to put in the request?
I'll mention something to Taylor.
Yeah, okay.
We text back and forth about Troy basketball.
All right,
since
good.
He's,
you
since he's
sort of
grad.
That's good when you can do it. It's sort of like when I like to do that when I'm making fantasy trades. I'll start off, you know, we've got some
hey, how you doing?
Stuff,
little
things that we might have in common.
Both Taylor and Ted have done outstanding work
they have.
As far as those are the sports information guys for football and
media
men's basketball. Yeah, so. I mean they're both doing great. Riley does a good job too.
And then of course George.
We love George. Of course, happy
absolutely.
To see George every time he's out there. So for football, like what's got your eye? What are you paying attention to when you're out there on practice?
I wanted to watch the offensive line. I watched the lines today. The offensive and defensive lines. Man, they got in just the drills. I thought they were really getting after it. I mean, really getting after it. Coach Hoodie and then Coach Hutzler. My goodness, he hit the sled about as hard as I've ever seen. He was showing what he wanted his one of the defensive ends to do, and then watching some of the D line out there working. So we didn't get a chance to see them going against each other. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Following practice today, we had a chance to talk to a couple of offensive linemen Jack Lehrer and Ty Buster. And Jack, the transfer from Stanford, very well spoken, as you would expect. But, I mean, he came over and he was very straightforward, just, hey, things didn't go the way that the offensive line expected or needed to at the end of practice. They got extra work. I mean, we walked out there thinking it's time for interviews, and we got to watch the offensive line continue to practice for a while because they did not feel like they finished the way they would like. So that's one of the things that Jack Lehrer was talking about. Ty Buster, man, just an impressive young guy. Still getting, I mean, he's getting a long look there at left tackle with Stanton Ramil, who was dressed out today, but not going through full workout. So Ty was working at left tackle, although the first guy out at left tackle today was Wilson Zier.
I told a story on the Observer podcast about this. When I was in Vegas for Players Era and the Resorts World Classic, I bumped into a couple of people who worked at Ty Buster's high school in North Carolina. Uh-huh. And when they found out I covered Auburn football, they were very interested because they knew Ty well and just had really complimentary things to say about him as a young man and obviously as a football player. But the thought that this is a guy who, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I don't hold it against you if you left. You know, if you decided after last season that, you know, this isn't what you signed up for and you had the opportunity to go play somewhere else and you wanted to utilize, like, yeah, no hard feelings against anybody who was on last year's team and isn't on this year's team. I think get a little extra credit for staying. And someone like Ty Buster, like, I love that he stayed. I think it would be really cool to see him break through and earn a starting job. He's going to have to beat out more experienced players.
Yeah, he is. I mean, well, the more experienced guy would be Stanton Ramil, who is, like I said, he's getting close. He was out there in full gear today, but just working and not really hitting like the other guys. I guess just sort of working his way back. Sort of, he and Chris Murray were in that category. They didn't have on the no contact, but they weren't going through all the full workouts.
Yeah, Ramil still strikes me as plan A.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any question.
For left tackle.
And he looks it. I mean, he came walking by. He looks like an SEC tackle.
Yeah, I mean,
Ty Buster looks more like a guard when you look at him. I mean, he's not the – he doesn't – you wonder about the length, the arms being able to handle things. But, I mean, he was pretty frank about, you know, what he'd learned since last year. He was talking about last year he was completely – out of his league when he was trying to block Keyron Crawford on the outside rush. He said, I couldn't even get my hands on him. He said, but things got better and better. I was
and a
interested.
Lot of guys, and a lot of guys had that problem.
Oh, yeah.
Blocking Keyron
but I was interested. When Ty first came over, he was asked about, you know, I forgot the exact phrasing of the question about heading into this fall. And he said, well, I expected to have a starting job, but then we've added these other players in his competition every day, and you've got to go through the competition and battling. And he's been battling. I think one of the most probably pleasant surprises of the spring has got to be Wilson Zier. Now pronounce his last name.
I thought it was Zier.
I did too. Zier. I think it is, okay. Is it. But I think Wilson is one of the surprises. You know, Adam Golish mentioned him the other day when he was asked about surprises, talking about he looks like a tackle, he thinks like a tackle, he's competitive. You can tell he had, you know, family that's played in the SEC and he's had an idea of what to expect. But that battle right there between those two youngsters is interesting. At left guard today.
Apparently, okay, it's two syllables.
Zierer.
Yeah.
I mean, because people have called him all different kinds of things.
Zaire.
Yeah.
Like the former.
Yep.
The nation. The Congo.
Z A I R E. Yeah. No, it's Z I E R E R. But yeah, it's Zierer. So I can see how that just sounds like Zier. But anyway.
And Killian was. I mean, look, Killian was a guy that you always looked at him and thought. I mean, he was the number one junior college tackle in the country when he came to Auburn. And it's like you saw him and it made sense why. Like he looked – another guy who looked the part and eventually got his turn and played played pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
in his senior year as the tackle.
But the left guard is a guy who, I mean, Derek Plaz is I think really making a push there at that left guard spot. He and Lehrer, who we talked to today, were the two players working there at the left guard. But Plaz is a guy that when they're going through workouts, when they're hitting sleds and things like that, there's a distinct sound. It sounds, you know, it's almost like when some batters hit a ball, it sounds different. When Plaz hits the sled, it sounds a little bit different than some of the other offensive linemen.
And that's a guy who saw the field at Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a guy who it would make sense if he's in the mix for playing time. It's not like you have two guys on this team that profile as, oh, well, they're clearly rock-solid guards based on everything they've done as college football players. You've got competition.
Oh, no.
Between
no
a bunch of guys that are – that are trying to break through, and yeah, I would think that Plaz is, I mean, along with, I don't know, Cole Skinner, maybe like those would be guys.
I think right now Cole Skinner looks like the I mean that he has a solid lead there at the right guard spot. So you got Cole Best. I mean, because the three guys on the right side appear to be they're there. Every time we've looked out there, it's been Joe Simmons at right tackle,
Big Joe
Cole
Simmons.
Skinner at right guard, and Cole Best is your center. And they went through a lot of drills today where it was a center, a guard, and a tackle on one side. It would be your left side of the line, and then you'd have the right side going. And I watched that for a good bit today. I was interested when I went down and watched the defensive line. Adam Golish was there with the defensive line for a good while before. I think he went over to the receivers after that.
He was over. Yeah, I was watching the receivers and the tight ends.
He was there with the defensive line for a good while, and he wasn't just an observer. He was coaching them up too and letting them know when he thought they did a good job or not.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which receiver. I want to say it was maybe Williams Jr. that Golish pulled aside, and it felt like for a solid couple of minutes, you know, just sort of gave one-on-one instruction, had a conversation mm-hmm. with him about...
He's an impressive-looking kid. He's a big, tall, lanky receiver.
Yeah, he watched, and we got to see the quarterbacks sort of uncork it and throw some deep balls today, and that's one of the areas where, I mean, there's a little something special coming off the hand of Byron Brown.
Yeah, if you worry about his motion, watch the ball.
Yeah.
Watch the ball come out and get where mm-hmm. it's supposed to be.
And I know, look, and I understand skepticism because Auburn fans have been they've been sold excitement about quarterbacks who have not panned out.
They haven't had Auburn hadn't had many guys come in that put up the numbers that Byron Brown did last year.
That is something decidedly different as far as like the momentum
in the offense that he's going to be running this year with most of the same players and coaches.
I guess Bo Nix played well as a senior in high school, but for the most part, you haven't seen quarterbacks come in
It wasn't Bo's fault that he didn't put up bigger numbers.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, generally speaking, quarterbacks haven't come in here with the momentum of mm-hmm. they played really well last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you didn't say that about Jackson Arnold.
You're right, since Bo.
You didn't say that about Jackson Arnold.
It's been since Bo that you had somebody coming in off of a great year.
You didn't say that about TJ or Robbie or Thorne. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't.
No, Peyton was coming off a disappointing year, you know, 2 years removed from his best year.
And even Stidham had a year where he sat out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Stidham played well at Baylor, but for the most part sat out that season in between before taking over at Auburn, and Stidham played really well in 2017, took Auburn to the SEC championship game. But no, I think that, you know, what's different is the idea that you have a quarterback not only who's got this kind of track record, not only played as well as he did last year, but like you said, Bill, is also following his head coach and a lot of the key offensive staff and a lot of his receivers and offensive linemen mm-hmm. to Auburn as well. So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of reason for, like, it's. There's a ton of reason for excitement with Byron Brown. Chatting with Ferguson on the sidelines during one of the drills, it's like he had an NFL draft guy who made the comparison to Dak Prescott, where he's like,
I think it makes a lot of sense. Byron, I mean, big, physical, strong runner who can throw it.
Well, I mean, and I think that Byron Brown does remind me of Dak Prescott's a good example, but I feel like there are a bunch of guys that Dan Mullen and or Urban Meyer coached that sort of remind you physically of Byron Brown, dating back to Tim Tebow, Alex Smith, right? Like, even, you know, you can go Cam Newton, of course. Like,
I think Byron Brown is a better passer than Tim Tebow.
Sure, but that's, I mean, but Tim Tebow was an excellent passer in college. You know what I mean? Ball got there, but the guys were wide open, is what people would say, as the counter to that. But.
I think Byron is showing here in practice that some of the numbers about his deep passing ability, that's something that you know, Tim did a, I mean, look, he was a fabulous, one of the best college players, you know, of his time. But he didn't have to make as many throws on the dime 40 yards downfield.
Well, and you had Fitzgerald, right, was the quarterback Mullen had at mm-hmm. Mississippi State a couple of years ago, who was an excellent runner and a
big kid.
Yeah, up and down passer. Yeah, big impressive athlete.
6'5" or so.
I've seen some, and this is an older one, but like I've seen some people compare Byron to Steve McNair,
you know,
remember Steve McNair? That's a good one.
The comparisons from a lot of folks when Byron was coming out was to Dante Culpepper.
Dante Culpepper was, and that happened a couple times during games last year where the commentators mm-hmm. would even mention Dante Culpepper.
Just because he's so big and physical.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and those are all. These are all flattering comparisons, right? When you're a quarterback, people say, yeah, Dante Culpepper, Steve McNair, Donovan McNabb, Tim Tebow, Dak Prescott, Cam Newton. You got to be so careful with some of those, right?
Oh, yeah.
Newton and Tebow. It's like, yeah, right, hold on now. But no, I mean, I still look at his receivers and say, like, I understand skepticism because it looks like his top options are guys making the jump with him from South Florida. If a guy like Nimrod or Singleton had decided, well, I want to go into the portal, but I don't want to go play for Alex Golish, I still think they'd be playing at a very, very big time program.
Chaz Nimrod would be in the SEC.
Sure.
He'd be somewhere in the SEC.
And not, you know what I mean? Like, and not just barely in the SEC.
No.
He'd be firmly in the.
Ma'am, just when the players are when they ran from the indoor, mm-hmm. I don't think you were there yet. They were warming up indoors.
That's right when I got there.
And then when they ran out of the field, he looks different just doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's big, and you can see that he gets to a very good speed really quickly. I'm excited about him, and that's one of the things that was it. I'm trying to remember if it was it may have been both of them, Lehrer and Buster, when we were talking to them, because I actually asked Dallas Walker, you know, who were some of the guys on the other side of the ball offensively, and again, you know, it's Chaz Nimrod, Byron. Obviously, he said obviously Byron, but I mean Nimrod's a guy that I think everybody can't help but notice when he's out there on the field. We better get to our final break of hour number one. Don't forget, Jake Crane will join us at the bottom of hour number two. But until then, phone lines are wide open, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with BillKNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here of hour number one. Do you want to try to get to the phone? We've only got about a minute left. Let's see. Mike is up first. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Bill, Dan. I had a quick, interesting bit of information to share with you. Yesterday, I listened to Mitch was talking about the German, the football teams they had overseas, and I was just curious if you might want to take a guess of who won the 19 or who was played in the 1943 Cotton Bowl. I thought this was really interesting. It was actually the Randolph Army Airfield Ramblers, and they played the Texas Longhorns to a 7-7 tie.
I bet they had players from all over the country on that team. So yeah,
they did.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, several NFL players.
Wow, I did not realize that they'd done that and that they'd fielded a military team against a college team in a bowl game. That's crazy. That's good stuff, Mike. Yes. Appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Music's playing. We are halfway done. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know Pat Dye played in the we played for the Doughboys.
The College All-Star. There used to be a College All-Star game that played against the NFL champs. That's crazy.
Andy Burcham to start second hour.
Outstanding. We will be right back with the second hour of the show.
Winter is in.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we spent the first hour, updating you. Auburn adding a basketball player, signing an international player, Narcisse Goy, a 7-footer from the B League, the second league in France, who averaged just under 11 points, 11 and a half rebounds, and a little over two and a half blocks per game this past year, has signed with Auburn, so he will be a part of Auburn's roster next year. Auburn baseball is in Atlanta. They will take on another top five team in Georgia Tech, a team Auburn beat 2 weeks ago, 9-2, but now they will play them over in Atlanta tonight. That a 6 o'clock first pitch, airtime 5:45 on Wings 94.3. Auburn basketball, the Auburn basketball team is in Indianapolis, where they will take on Illinois State in the semifinals of the NIT tomorrow night from Hinkle Fieldhouse, historic Hinkle.
And I'm so glad that we are able to connect with our next guest for a couple of reasons. One, I'd love to know his history of Indianapolis and his ties to the region, if he's ever been to a game at Hinkle, if he's ever broadcast a game at Hinkle before. And also, Illinois State, a fun opponent, because last year when Troy made their run in the WNIT, Illinois State was the opponent for Troy in the semifinals. We went to Normal, Illinois, and Andy actually had some Italian food recommendations for me in Normal, Illinois. And now a year later, the Redbirds, the fighting Doug Collinses, are going to be Auburn's opponent in the NIT, and it's as fate would have it, as luck would have it, we actually are able to connect with.
We usually have Andy on in the first hour, but the team was on its way en route to Indianapolis, but I believe Andy's in his room and checking in with us here on the Tuesday Drive. Hey, Andy, how was the trip?
It was a terrific trip. Flew up, got here pretty quickly. A police escort to downtown Indianapolis.
Nice.
We are staying catty corner from Lucas Oil Stadium. So a reminder perhaps of where we wish we were playing
right
this weekend. But happy to be here and taking part in the NIT Final Four. When the team got off the bus, they were greeted by an Indy car. We flew in past Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The guys got their pictures taken with a bona fide Indy car that does 230 out there at the Indy Motor Speedway. And Randall and I waited until the guys were gone, and then we got our picture taken. Not inside, but outside of what's so cool this summer or this year is when we were in Las Vegas, the night we flew to Las Vegas was the night of the F1 race in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And there were F1 cars on display all over Las Vegas, including the team hotel where we were staying. So we got to see an F1 car up close and personal, and now we get to see an Indy car here in Indianapolis. And the guys will go out, and they are going to have a delicious meal at St. Elmo's, which is one of the great steakhouses in America and very, very well known here in Indianapolis. By the way, I'm going tomorrow night to St. Elmo's. They're known.
I've been tipped, Andy. I actually was tipped off by an insider to the possibility that you were going to go to St. Elmo's.
Well, and they're also known for their shrimp cocktail, mm-hmm. which has so much horseradish in it that the cocktail sauce is not red; it's pink. Mm.
Oh,
it
wow.
will clean out your sinuses. So I'm looking forward to that. And tomorrow we will get a chance. We will get a chance to go and practice at historic Hinkle Fieldhouse. And to answer your question, Dan, I have very little history here in Indianapolis, despite the fact that I went to Indiana State and my folks have a great deal of history. My dad, who grew up just south of Terre Haute, Indiana, he and his mom and dad came over to the Indy 500 almost every year. Prior to our trip here in December to play Purdue, the only time I had ever been in Indianapolis was I got press passes to come over and see Larry Bird play a game while I was in Indiana State. So this would have been about 5 or 6 years into his career with the Celtics. They played the Pacers at Old Market Square Arena, and we got press credentials, and I got to ask Larry Bird a question.
Wow.
And he answered it in about 3 words and walked off. But I might have forgotten to tell him that we were from Indiana State. I'm not certain. I was so in awe of the man. Larry Bird may be my favorite individual athlete of all time, and certainly growing up. But so to be honest, I don't have a great deal of history here. I'm glad to be back for this. Really happy to go to Hinkle Fieldhouse tomorrow for practice, and then the Tigers will shoot around on Thursday, and then we'll play their first round game of the NIT semifinals there tomorrow night. If Auburn wins that game against Illinois State, it will play either Tulsa or New Mexico at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which is now the home to the Pacers on Sunday night. So, but happy to be here. Weather's terrific, and this town is about to get crazy, and I mean crazy, because not only is it the NIT, that's obviously the Final Four, and also the Division II and Division III national championship games.
I think it's great, Andy.
Played here as well. I do too.
Yeah, I love the fact that all these, you know, these things are going on at the same time, and folks, may not be able to get into the Final Four, but they're going to have a chance to see some great basketball. Yeah. And the folks that are there for the Final Four, can come over and hopefully have great crowds for all of these.
Yeah, truly a college. I mean, it turns it into something of a college basketball Super Bowl
basketball showcase. Yeah.
Yeah. Illinois State's probably 2.5 to 3 hours away from Indianapolis. It's an easy drive to Indy from Bloomington Normal. Oddly enough, my first job out of college, 1983-84, I was calling games for Illinois State. That was my first job out of college. We were not even the official radio station, but we were allowed. I did all the football games, the basketball games, and all the home baseball games that season. Then I moved to Carbondale, then eventually to Auburn. So I don't know anybody with Illinois State now. That was 1983-84. So it's been a few minutes since I called games for Illinois State. This is the first time since I moved to Auburn that I will call a game against the team that I used to call games for.
Wow.
First time. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
That's
really
it. The Andy Burcham Bowl in the semifinals here for
and they have no idea about that at Illinois State, nor should they.
Yeah, they should. They could have used it in their notes. I think Ted could have used that in his notes.
Andy, I think it's Indiana that does a promotion during one of their timeouts where they have an eating contest with the St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail.
Shrimp cocktail halftime contest. They did that at halftime of the Auburn-Purdue game, and the guy that won it almost got sick.
This thing is atomic. It's famously atomic. So, yeah, look, you know, one of several things you got to do when you're in Indianapolis. And for Auburn, I've been really enthused. Like, you have to keep in mind, it comes with the asterisk. Like, yes, this is not the tournament that they set out to make when the season started, and they wanted to be an NCAA tournament team. But this is the tournament they're in, and I've been really enthused about the way they've delivered.
Since the first 15 to 18 minutes of the opening game against South Alabama, Auburn has really played.
It took the first half of that South Alabama game, I think, just to get back into the swing of the competition. I'm not saying that it didn't matter to this team. It did.
No, but there was sort of a hangover for not making the big dance.
They were getting over not making the NCAA tournament. And regardless of how you feel about Auburn's strength of schedule, which, by the way, is back up to number three now, and Auburn will have played, let's see, two of the final four teams that will be playing against each other in Arizona and Michigan coming up this weekend. And listen, you win that Ole Miss game at Auburn, you're probably in. So, but I like the fact, and Bill, you were at the presser yesterday, and Stephen Pearl, and I had not heard this story, that Keyshawn Hall was one of the first guys to say, yes, I want to play. And I'll be honest, when we thought about the NIT and guys opting out, he was one guy that I didn't know if he wanted to play. But, buddy, he has, and he has played well. He comes off of a career-high 15 rebounds against Nevada last week. And I hope he has the same kind of game on Thursday against Chase Walker, who is a load at 6'9", 280.
Yeah.
He should be playing defensive end.
Or offensive tackle, yeah.
Yes, for Illinois State. And he's a two-time Missouri Valley Conference first-team MVC player. So this guy has some skills. He draws fouls very well. He's a good shooter, mid-range and in. And like everyone else, he shoots three. He has 9 threes on the season. So this is a team where Auburn has to defend the three well, Bill, because they will shoot it, and they will shoot it often, and they shoot it well for this ball game Thursday night. Auburn plays the second game on Thursday night. We're on the air right here on ESPN 106.7 starting at 8. I don't think we'll start at 8:30.
I'd be surprised.
I think there's a chance in the world that we start that game at 8:30. But that's the scheduled start for it right now.
Yeah.
This is Keyshawn Hall's fourth year of D1 college basketball. And he's never been to a postseason other than the conference tournament. You look at where else he played.
Like, wow, I didn't even realize that. I knew he hadn't been in the NCAA tournament.
No, I wonder if UCF played in something and he was gone already by the time that happened last year, because he was in the portal pretty early last season.
Well, remember, he was at the Final Four with Auburn last year. He made the trip there on his own to be at Auburn's Final Four in San Antonio. So he may well have been. But he has played. Listen, when they lost Keyshawn Murphy, and that's a loss. I mean, you've lost your bona fide post player. But those guys that are starting now, that starting five of Tahad Pettifer, Kevin Overton, Elijah Freeman, Keyshawn Hall, and Philip Jovich are all averaging double digits in scoring in Auburn's three games in the NIT. And that, I think that there's something to be said for that. And Philip almost had a double-double against Nevada, just needed one more rebound. Sebastian Williams-Adams, coming off the bench, had a career-high 15 points against Seattle. Tahad Pettiford, I think, has played some of his best all-around basketball for Auburn, not only as a scorer but as a point guard, and has cut down on his turnovers as well. Kevin Overton, until the Nevada game, was as hot as anybody with Auburn as far as shooting the three. Cooled off a little bit the other night. I thought he still played very well defensively. And then Elijah Freeman has just come on for Auburn. He's been Auburn's best rebounder statistically of late, just with great athleticism. I like the way this ball club's playing, but they're going to have to play well against a highly motivated Illinois State team that is, as Stephen said yesterday, has the best resume in the NIT. Right now, won a game at home and then went on the road and won at Wake Forest and at Dayton to make it to Indianapolis. And nobody has put together those kind of games, and especially on the road, like Illinois State has, among the four teams that are here right now.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, they feel like they're the home team in this one. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, how much support they have and how much how many Auburn fans make the trip up there to Indy. So that's going to be quite the challenge on Thursday. Andy, before we let you go, wanted to get a couple of thoughts on baseball because tonight Auburn in Atlanta for that return game against Georgia Tech, a team that Auburn beat handily 2 weeks ago. But right now they're trying to find some offense. The bats have really gone silent here over the last couple of weeks.
Well, you know, you look at what happened last Tuesday in Auburn. You know, run rules South Alabama, and then goes to Alabama and can't score.
Scores four runs in three games.
Yeah, just three games, scored four runs in three games. And, you know, you lose one in walk-off fashion on Saturday night. You lose the Sunday game by two. And it wasn't because of the pitching. The offense just did not produce for Auburn. Chatterton will get the start tonight for Auburn unless something has changed from earlier today, and they're going to move Andres Alvarez to the Thursday night starter against Arkansas, and then keep Marciano on Friday, and then they'll make a decision on Saturday between Sanders and Petrovic. All four of those guys pitched very, very well last week. Those four guys pitched well enough for Auburn to go 4-0 last week. It was the offense in the Alabama series, and then they've got to find a way, and I don't know exactly what that is. They've got to find a way to put together some crooked innings, which they just have not been able to do in the last week. And that's going to be it'll be a challenge tonight against Tech, a game that begins here in about, 45 minutes, I guess. Tech probably is lying in wait for Auburn after what Auburn did to Tech a couple of weeks ago at Auburn. Tech is still the number three team in the country. I guess Auburn has slipped to 11 after the weekend. So, listen, Auburn swept Georgia Tech a year ago, goes for the sweep tonight in Atlanta. Brad and Jason Caldwell on the call from Atlanta starting at 5:45 over on Wings 94.3.
Yeah, I see Tech is going with a lefty who has a he's 1-0, but he's got a 6.97 ERA and a 1.65 WHIP. So hopefully Auburn can get back on it. Looking at the lineup, pretty much what you would expect. Although Cade Ballou is getting an opportunity, he's one of the few guys that has had some success in SEC play. So Cade's going to get an opportunity to get the start in right field tonight. So yeah, that's coming up less than a half an hour away from pregame.
Is Madrigal, and I don't have my computer in front of me, so is Madrigal the DH
or
the first baseman?
He's DHing and hitting. He's DHing and hitting cleanup.
All right, so Bingaman's
at first.
Is the first baseman, and Frelick back behind the plate tonight.
That is right. So it's pretty much your regular lineup. It's Carter, Frelick, Rembert, Madrigal, Guevara, Terrell, Bingaman, Ballou, Brandon McCrane. There's your starting lineup.
I'd like to see Bub.
Oh yeah, he really needs
because
to.
Because of late, it's been a bit of a struggle for Bub, especially against left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. And there's a lefty starting tonight, but we know what he can do.
No question.
And how dynamic he can be, not only at the plate but in the outfield. I'm glad to see him back in the lineup, and hopefully he starts to turn things around for this Auburn ball club. And he's not the only one.
No.
He's one of those guys that I want to see turn things around for the Tigers.
Yeah, because all right, Arkansas coming in for the Thursday through Saturday games as well. So yeah, it's going to be a quite the challenge. Andy, enjoy your time up there in Indy, and looking forward to the game Thursday night. Hopefully it's not too much later than 8:30 getting started.
I would imagine, I am guessing right now that it will be an 8:40 start.
Mm-hmm.
That's my over and under. My over and under is 9.5 minutes.
All right. You heard that, folks. Andy's got 9.5 minutes after 8:30.
Yeah, place your bets accordingly, folks.
No, don't do that. I'm just saying 9.5 minutes is my over and under on our start for Thursday night. We'll be there. Doesn't matter. I mean, how many of these games has Auburn played? Seems like every game in the last 2 months of the season has been like this, including a 9 o'clock game in the first game of the NIT against South Alabama, for goodness sakes. And it'll be a 9:30 game here.
Yeah, no, that's just the way it is. But at least you're playing.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's where we'll be, baby. Where we'll be.
All right, Andy, can you update us on everything? There's a lot going on with the Auburn Sports Network.
Right now on our Talking Tigers podcast, and these guys left yesterday for Tucson, Arizona. Head coach Rob Taylor and the reigning National Player of the Year, Jake Eastwood, with Auburn's wheelchair basketball team, the number two national seed. Alabama is the number one national seed. They're in opposite brackets. As they're getting ready for the Nationals that start this week in Tucson, Arizona. So you get to hear from Rob, who, of course, coached the U.S. men to a gold medal at the Paralympics in Paris 2 years ago. So a great conversation with those two. Coming up on Monday, Jared Benko, who's Auburn's executive deputy director of athletics. And if you just take a look at all the things that are under his purview, it includes finance and NIL and IT. And I mean, it, it, He has a lot on his plate. Came to Auburn after 4 years as the athletic director at Georgia Southern, and we're seeing more and more. There was another one today that made the move to Baylor from a mid-major as an athletic director to take an executive spot at Baylor today. So we're seeing more and more of that move, like Jared Benko made. But just a talk with him about NIL and everything that's going on at Auburn. So that's coming up. No Tiger talk this week, obviously, with both baseball and basketball playing. Our final Tiger talk out of Baumhauer's will be a week from Thursday. We will have Butch Thompson. We will have the Malvos. And we're working on getting Alex Golish or one of the staff members from football to help preview A-Day for us as well. That will be a week from Thursday out at Baumhauer's Victory Grill.
Sounds good, Andy. Again, hey, we really appreciate you getting with us, spending a little bit of time with us here after you arrived in Indy. Have a great time there, and hopefully you're sticking around through Sunday.
I hope so, too. I can't wait to see Hinkle Fieldhouse tomorrow. Call a game from there, and then I'm hoping that I'm calling another game from Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Sunday night for the NIT Championship.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks again, man. Really appreciate you spending time with us.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, spending a little time with us here in the 5 o'clock hour on Tuesday, usually with us in first hour. So yeah, we appreciate him doing that. We'll get to our first break. Right back with more here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, our thanks to Andy Burcham joining us from Indianapolis. Auburn, Illinois State. I'd forgotten that. On Andy's resume. I mean, I hadn't looked at it in a while. That's where he got his start. So the team that he first called, first did play by play for, Illinois State, and now Auburn is facing him. And as he said, it's the first time he's done a game against a team that he used to call.
And you can catch Andy's call of the NIT semifinal on the Auburn Sports Network. Wings 94.3 will have that Thursday night. You heard Andy mention the game is scheduled to start at 8:30, but it is the second game of the semifinal. They're both being held at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Butler's arena. New Mexico and Tulsa are playing in the first game, and that game is scheduled to start at 6. So be prepared for the Auburn NIT game on Thursday night to maybe start a little bit late. You heard Andy's prediction of right around 8:50, right? Like so. So right, right in that ballpark of, give or take a few minutes from the 8:30.
8:40.
Yeah, 8:40 was his prediction.
Yeah, 9.5 minutes was his over-under, he said, after 8:30 as to when it's going to start. So, yeah, it'll be late night, but as he said, Auburn should be getting used to it. They've played a lot of late games this year. Again, in case you weren't with us in hour number one, we talked about Auburn adding a player to its roster for next year, signing an international player from France, Narcisse Goy, a 7-footer. What was the I don't have it in front of me here. Anyway, he played for a team in the French B League, the second.
The Poitiers, right?
Yeah, the Poitiers somethings.
Sydney's.
Hercule. No, okay, that was Poirot. That's a. But anyway, averaged just under 11 points, 11.5 rebounds, and a little over 2.5 blocks per game. And Stephen Pearl, in the release that Auburn had earlier today, saying that he feels that he's an advanced player. Now he's been playing pro ball since he was 17 and he's 20, so I guess this is his fourth year of playing professional basketball there in France. But that's one of the things. Stephen was asked yesterday about Brian Clomen, the new GM, and said he has great international connections. Don't know if he had anything to do with Narcisse winding up at Auburn, but looks like a nice addition to Auburn for next season. So like that one. Auburn probably wishes they had him to go against the big guy for Illinois State, a 280-pounder who Stephen Pearl said, you know, it's not like the Nevada guy, but he is similar in that he really is good at drawing fouls. And so, I mean, that's going to be tough with Auburn just having, you know, Filip Jovic and Sebastian Williams-Adams there, you know, on the inside to try to handle him.
Yeah, there's some mid-major flavor to this Illinois State team. They've got multiple players who, you know, are Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota type. Some of them transferred in from the Summit League or the Horizon League. They got a couple of, I know one of the guys is the is like the leading shooter, leading scorer in the history of North Dakota high school basketball. I mean, they've got, and then around that, they've got a big, strong post that can pass it out to his shooters if he's not winning.
And they're a good three-point shooting team. So Auburn's going to have to continue. I really think the last couple of ball games Auburn's played about as well as they have all year defensively, and I think they need to continue that.
And I think there's been a deliberate desire to get out in transition and run. You know, try to whether it's with forcing live ball turnovers or by just pushing on the, you know, after misses, just trying to go. And that's something that it's been to Auburn's advantage to try to press the issue with transition basketball. And I think if they can make it happen Thursday night, it would be to their advantage as well.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone before we get to our bottom of the hour break, because Jake Crane will join us on the other side. So we're going to head into this blind. Who have we got?
Hey, Bill, it's Brett from Beauregard.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. I, like y'all, read up on this fella from France, whatever, but I saw his scoring and rebounding, but did you see anything on whether he can shoot free throws okay? Or
Have not seen those numbers, no. No, and there may be a reason that we haven't, seen that, Brett. Yeah.
I know he's not a three-point shooter. I was just wondering if even he was a 60% free throw shooter or whatever. But
that I do not know.
Don't know.
Just, yeah, we saw the 70% from two and figured that's probably pretty close in.
Yeah, from the videos, I would say so. he's a pretty strong dunker, let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, like Dan and I were talking about it a while ago, Brett, though. I mean, and speaking with some of the beat writers today, I mean, I still think that everybody expects Auburn to try to bring in an experienced five as well. He's a guy to come in that could really help you on, rim protection.
Right, yeah, well, which we desperately need.
Oh, yeah.
Any word on who they're looking at as a forward? I saw the long list of other foreigners, and my gosh, there were some good ones out there.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they're going to be shopping at the top of the market with college basketball transfers to add to the size on this team. I mean, especially if you can retain Sebastian and Jovic. You know, I would think that Narcisse, yeah, and then maybe somebody who, you know, has a track record as a rim protecting five, as a guy, maybe a high major. I mean, and I know that when players like that are in the portal, everybody wants them. But I think that's something Auburn's going to have to go try to find to replace Keyshawn Murphy and try to give the team a more of a fighting chance around the basket.
Yeah, I saw somebody posted that it looked like that they were going to give Oporum, you know, the option to stay, that they were still interested in him. But I don't know his medical condition. But anyway. All right, y'all have a great evening.
Appreciate it, Brett. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, and Thomas Dowd, who's was one of the top players on Troy, one of the top players in the Sun Belt this year. Dothan High kid. We talked about him when Jason was in here. Jason saw him play back in high school. He's going to the portal. He's a junior, 6'8", 15 points a game, 10 rebounds a game for Troy this past year. Rangier four, I would say. He's kind of a 3-4 for a high major team, but a guy that, I mean, certainly if he wants to stay local, Scott Cross in Atlanta, is there, but Auburn and Florida State are both schools pretty close to Dothan that could be looking to add in the portal this offseason.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane joins us on the other side, so stick with us for the final half hour
of the Tuesday Drive.
Hey, everybody, this is Jacob Goins.
Call 334-321-1390, toll-free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're efforting Jake Crane of Crane & Cone, see if we can get him on, get his thoughts here as we head to the Final Four, get his thoughts on Auburn sports as well as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive. Again, our thanks to Andy Burcham joining us earlier this hour from Indianapolis, where the Tigers, basketball Tigers, are there getting ready to take on Illinois State on Thursday night. But we're heading into the Final Four. What a great, great matchup that a lot of people feel is the should be the national championship game, with Arizona and Michigan in the nightcap of the Final Four, after UConn and Illinois play there in Game 1. So, looking forward to that coming up on Saturday before we have the championship game Monday. And then the transfer portal opens on Tuesday, and more players are announcing that their intentions of entering the transfer portal. Saw where Georgia's starting center has announced he's going to enter the portal. We were talking about, Auburn probably looking for another five. That wouldn't be a bad one. I would think there'd be quite a bit of interest in Surreal as well. I mean, led the SEC in blocks this past year, an all SEC defensive player. He's going to be in high demand all over the country.
Yeah, I don't think
guy that, with 2 years of eligibility left.
I'll tell you what, the college basketball portal, I mean, you can hold a candle for a guy and be like, yeah, it'd be great if my team went and got that specific guy. There are a lot of suitors.
Dude,
a lot of suitors and a lot.
There's a lot of money out there.
And a lot of different programs that want that same guy. A lot of fan bases holding those same candles for those guys. And so, I would hope that Auburn can navigate their way through the portal. But we'll see. But Cyril's a big. I mean, Mike White's been trying to hold on to some of these guys. Mm-hmm. He lost Demery to UConn last year. Cyril's a tough pill to swallow for that program.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we're seeing that. Do we have good? Cool. We were a little late getting to break, so late trying to get in touch with we had him on the line. It's one of those days where Dan, one of us is having to run the board, and Dan always. There we go. I think we may have him back. Dan running the board, and in his effort to block out anyone else calling, blocked out Jake there for a second. But I think we have him now. Jake Crane of Crane & Cone, one of our favorites and long time. We've both known Jake for a long time, as we welcome him in here on the Tuesday Drive. Jake, how you doing, man?
Great. I just hope that new Frenchman can block out as good as Dan can on the phone.
All right. Well, my finger's over the button again, Jake. So watch it, buddy.
Look, Narcisse.
Pull the ripcord whenever you want, buddy.
Yeah, we've been talking about Narcisse Goy, the latest addition to the team, that international signing. Hey, that's a good start. Auburn need some more help in the front court and probably at point.
Yeah, all comers. Look, I don't care if you're, from UConn, Arkansas, or Yugoslavia. If you can help us get back to where we need to be, we'll take you. But, yeah, and I don't think it's a coincidence that you hire a general manager that specializes in overseas players, and within a week and a half, you get one of the top overseas big men. Watching his tape, I mean, and again, I always watch things from a football perspective. So I'm, seeing, can he bend? How well does he run? Things like that. He's pretty quick twitch for a 6'11 guy barefoot with a 7'7 wingspan. The summer's going to be huge for him, going up against guys that are bigger. If you watch that tape, there's a reason France lost World War II in 3 weeks. They're not exactly huge and upset over there. So it's going to take some time for him to get used to the size. But from a talent and a potential standpoint, man, at least we got somebody that's over 6'7".
Yeah, that's
– I don't want to nitpick. Technically, France won World War II, all right? You know, eventually, you know, they were part of – they were on the winning side eventually.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean, Jake.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, but no.
Yeah, the VC government did awesome, man.
I'm just saying, eventually they were on the winning side. But you are – no, you're right. I mean, this is – it seems like it's this gigantic adjustment for – I mean, even high-level international players to step into – the SEC to major conference college basketball. I think Jovic has had a really impressive freshman year, but he was a work in progress when Auburn went and got him last year. And I would think this doesn't, unless the expectations internally are just off the charts for Narcisse, I would think Auburn is still going to be shopping at the top of the market for rim protection when the portal opens next week.
Yeah, and I tell you, man, I think Okpara, and again, I don't know the extent of the health situation with him, but I thought he did some good things earlier in the year, and I thought losing him from a depth standpoint in the front court really killed Auburn. Jovic is undersized too. I mean, he's undersized and can't shoot. That's a tough combo as a freshman, but I think his potential is there to be quality. And I mean, I'm looking right now, Dan, there's two teams in the Final Four that when you read through their lineup, it sounds like a NATO meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Avisic brothers from Illinois that are both 7-footers. You've got three guys on Arizona. I mean, one's like Putin's grandson. So, like, I mean, at some point, it has worked from an international standpoint. I think you go and try and get the best players available because at the end of the day, basketball is a language that that I think they can speak.
Well, and remember too, like with Tommy Floyd, like Tommy Lloyd, they went to with Gonzaga. Like they were going all over the world to get those players, you know, before he got the Arizona job. So yeah, I think that's and we've seen Auburn be able to dip into those international ranks even before Jovic. So yeah, it's nice to see those connections continuing to pay off. But you still get the sense that Auburn's going to have to be fishing for some serious sharks when the portal. Starts to churn.
They're swimming with some. There's no question about that. And this thing.
Well, I mean, there's some guys. What I'm interested to see is what the blend is that Auburn uses, international and mid-major. Because there's some guys that have come out mid-major here recently that I think could really help Auburn. And that's front court and the guard spot. You know, the O'Dowd kid from Troy, I just like his toughness. He reminds me of a Bruce Pearl-type player. I mean, I think they're going to try and diversify the portfolio as much as possible to get the best five guys on the floor.
Jake, let's get your thoughts on the Final Four, the NCAA Final Four that has it looked like we were going to have three number one seeds in Illinois until that unbelievable last second win by UConn.
Wow.
But man, a heck of a Final Four we've got here, including the nightcap on Saturday, which a lot of people, you know, feel like should be the national championship game with Arizona and Michigan.
Well, you know, you just feel like those are the two best teams. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say at all.
No,
no disrespect to Illinois or UConn, but when you look at Michigan and Arizona, they really have everything. When you look at size, scoring ability, I would say I think Michigan's a better shooting team overall and a better offensive team than Arizona is, but you know, Tommy Lloyd's going to run his stuff. They do a really good job of it. Defensively, I think Jaden Bradley's probably the best defensive guard left. You could make an argument with some guys from UConn and then just the size of Michigan. But it does feel like, you know, you look at the spreads right now. I haven't looked at it today, but it was 1.5 Michigan. I'd be willing to bet that regardless of who wins that Michigan-Arizona game, it's going to be at least 3.5 to 4.5 to Michigan or Arizona. So I'm fired up to see it. I mean, it's going to be really, really high-level basketball. And I tell you, man, I'm Dan Hurley. I'm just so impressed by the way his teams play. They, you know, you talk about playing hard, playing through the whistle. It is a football term, but they use it in basketball. I can't wait.
And what a – I mean, no matter what happens this weekend, seemingly, like that UConn-Duke finish is going to be one of those March Madness moments that
Dan, why can't Duke get the ball in? Like
why
not do anything? Just hold the ball. All you have to do, there's 10 seconds. You'd realize.
I mean, they could trap you, but
Well, Bill, my thing is they didn't have the possession arrow, so the jump ball scares you, right? You get a held ball.
It scares you, but I mean,
the ball back.
Cover
but
it up with both
arms.
Throw
the ball in the air. Mm. I would just, at that point, throw the ball as high in the air as humanly possible. That's going to eat 3 to 4 seconds. God knows who's going to catch it, and good luck, make a half-court shot. So I just – and if you look, I mean, Duke had two guys wide open down the floor. Yeah. How you underthrow that, it just shocks me.
And it's going to be – I mean, second year in a row that Duke's had this dream season with a nightmare finish, right? I mean, with the loss to Houston last year and the way that went down, and then to be up 19 – and, I mean, that game felt over, and UConn crawls back. You get the sense in the last minute that the game is, in fact, not over, and that's how it ends.
Yeah, and I just – my main thing is, look, and a lot of people are trashing Duke, and they should. I think you got to give a lot of credit to UConn, too. Those guys just – they just fight. I mean, Terrace Reed is an absolute monster, who I believe transferred from Michigan. Can you imagine if they still had him, too? With the rest of the things they got running around, it was just a crazy finish. But that's why I think March Madness is the greatest postseason sporting event we have. It reminded me of that Furman game. I forgot who they played.
Dan Virginia.
But I'll never forget it because Auburn signed J.P. Pegues, and I don't think he made a shot the whole year.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, there was a Troy-USC game earlier this year, Jake, that went to like a bunch of overtimes. Troy nearly beat USC in Los Angeles. And Troy had a situation like that where all they had to do was sit on it at the end after a missed free throw and trying to advance it, turnover leads to an open three-pointer for USC, and that's how they won.
Just knee it out, man.
Yeah. Yep, it is. Well, that's that happens, and
even you know what? Even if you're going to turn it over, a dead ball turnover is so much less costly than the live ball.
It feels less painful almost. I mean, yep.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, the Mullins kid had no time to think about it, which those are the most dangerous shots. You just got to get it and fire it. There's no time to think, oh, God, this is our season, as opposed to having to inbound the ball, run a set play, knowing what's on the line. It's just it's human nature.
Yeah, it's sort of like sometimes you know, pitchers that don't realize they're starting get thrown out there. I wanted to sort of shift to baseball because the reaction from a lot of Auburn folks is, oh God, it's all over. This baseball team is terrible. I mean, look, it there's no question. It sucks to get swept by your rival, but you're a baseball guy, Jake. I mean, it's a long season. Yeah. And there are going to be some streaks. There are going to be some slumps. It's just unfortunate that right now Auburn's bats are ice cold.
Yeah, I mean, I think the approaches just haven't been great. And look, it doesn't help. And this is just the truth. I don't know if he's listening or not. And some of it's not on him. But like John Cohen, you better figure this losing to Alabama stuff out, buddy, or you won't be here. But this ain't Mississippi State. Like if this continues on this trend, you don't need to be here. I understand that Auburn baseball is still ranked. Butch Thompson's an incredible coach. I'm not worried about the baseball team. They have the pitching, which that's what's going to last you. Mm-hmm. The bats are going to come and go. But this whole just getting worked by Bama and everything, that don't work here. Hoping Golich can turn that around. You see what happens with Stephen Pearl. But John Cohen better figure out how to beat Alabama sometime soon, or he can go back to Starkville for all I'm concerned.
Well, you know, I would be more concerned, Jake, if you got the sense it was acceptable from any of those.
How many times can you lose in a row, Dan? Well, that's like, the thing. But what point is this acceptable?
Well, when a football coach, the football coach got fired, right? Didn't even make it to the Iron Bowl. Like it was DJ coaching in the Iron Bowl, and then with Steven, like, despite this run to Indianapolis and the possibility of hanging the NIT banner at Neville Arena, there's still tremendous pressure on Steven to improve in year two.
Oh, 100%.
And losing two to Bama, I think, contributes to that. It's like I think for the most part, like if we're talking this time next year about another season where Auburn went over.
Auburn's 0-12 against Alabama next year.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And we need to stop worrying about all the stuff off the field and start worrying about the on-the-field stuff. And it ain't just about one person. It's about Auburn. And that needs to change, and it needs to change quickly. Because he's making a lot of money to not beat Bama. And the buck does stop with him, just like it stops with a head coach for individual sports. You're the athletic director, and you're getting your pants pulled down in front of everybody by Alabama consistently, and it needs to be fixed, or we need to fix who's in the position. And I'm not afraid to say it.
Yeah, Jake Crane will tell you what he thinks, and you get the opportunity to check that out on Crane & Co. Let everybody know what you got coming up, Jake.
Definitely. Well, it's a lot more positive with Golish. We had Josh Pate on the show today talking about Golish, and look, he's like me. I think year one, he could do some things. So, yeah, just head on over to Crane & Cone on YouTube, C-R-A-I-N and Cone, and come check us out. We'll tell you what we really think because they ain't sent me a check yet.
I hear you. Great stuff, Jake. Thanks, man. Have a great week.
All right, man. Y'all be good.
Jake Crane joining us as he does Tuesdays for the final half hour of the show. We need to get to our last break, and we'll be back to wrap things up here on the Tuesday Drive.
At Opelika Power Services, we're more.
Fun show today. Our thanks to Jake Crane for just joining us just now. Andy Burcham earlier this hour. If you missed any of the show, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron.
Auburn baseball about to get started over on Wings 94.3. Jason Caldwell on the color. He'll be with us tomorrow in hour number one. Hope you'll join us then.
Should talk to Adam Cole in hour number two as well.
Adam's over in Atlanta covering the ball game, so we'll have both those guys on, and hopefully you'll join us as well on the show tomorrow. We're out of time today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.